call it the eighth year syndrome. Last year of a presidency and scores of politically appointed slots throughout the federal government are vacant and likely to stay that way until the next administration comes in. How do career executives manage through it? We get some advice from Danny Werfel, former acting IRS commissioner, longtime federal financial executive. He's now a director in the public sector practice at the Boston Consulting Group. Danny, good to have you back.
Thanks for having me on, Tom.
And it's not even safe to say that in early on in a new administration, those political appointees will be there. Sometimes it takes a couple of years for that end to get ramped up also.
Yes, yeah, certainly the transition is longer than just, you know, the election through January 20th. It starts earlier than that, as you just mentioned, with political appointees departing in advance of the end of a presidential term. And then, as you mentioned, as much as we'd like to see a lot of that hiring and appointment process happen very rapidly, it can tend to drag on.
And why do people leave so far in advance of an administration being over? I know they want to get on with their careers and good offers come in from their experience, but isn't there something to be said for sticking it out to the end?
Yeah, I mean, and those that do stick it out and can really get rewarded because with the various vacancies that emerge, you know, you get to do some really exciting and important work. I mean, running the country, as our government does, never takes a break. So, you know, even, you know, in early January of next year, in December, and even after the election, there's critically important functions going on, and there are political appointees who will choose to stay on till the end, who will gain remarkable experiences through that process.
Plus, it must just feel good to be there to, in effect, turn the lights out for the next people to turn them in, and a sense of completion and closure on the whole experience you might have had.
Yeah, I think everyone, you know, involved has to make a personal decision. You mentioned, why would someone leave early? There's so much to balance. There's obviously work-life balance, and for many people that are in the government, and in particular in political positions, it's a 24/7 job. You're always on call. Imagine you've been doing it now for 5, 6, 7 years in a row, and there reaches a point at which you feel like, I've done what I can do. The light is at the end of the tunnel, but I'm going to give a break back to my family and pack it in a little earlier and get some time with them. So, but again, that's a personal decision, and there's a lot of other factors at play.
In the meantime, though, those federal career people, executive level or just manager level or maybe worker bee level, have to carry on in some manner. So what do you do in this period when there might be a vacancy at the policy level, and yet you've got to carry on and do the day-to-day work? Or how do you get through that?
Well, having been in that experience and having acted at the end of an administration in a political position when the political I was serving under left, it's an exciting opportunity, and in many ways it can be a win-win, because by filling out those functions, by doing that work at the end of the administration, you get a new set of experiences, new sets of responsibilities that really help you become a better career civil servant in the long run, because when you go back to being your career position and that new political appointee walks in, you've now walked in their shoes a bit. You can empathize and understand what their challenges are, and you can serve them more effectively for having been in that function for a while.
When you are someone who is in a career position and someone new politically comes in and they are bringing new policies, what do you do to implement those policies versus just the day-to-day work where, I don't know, maybe in Treasury or maybe in OMB, where there's just function on mechanisms that go on regardless of the policy?
Believe it or not, and some people might disagree with me on this, but my experience has been about 90% of what we do in the federal government stays relatively constant no matter who the administration is. You know, we're doing things, law enforcement, we're protecting all types of security, economic security, homeland security, the safety of our roads, the safety of our skies. And 90%, and some might say even more than 90% of that, stays the same, or at least the path that you're on to reform, to improve, to get better is going to be a similar path regardless of administration. Now, there is the 10% that's different, and there certainly are different levers that different political parties may push, but I think that most civil servants find that when that new political appointee comes in, it's less about we're completely reshuffling the deck in terms of our work product going forward, and it's more about learning a new personality and making sure that you're meeting that person's needs effectively in the type of organization they want to run.
We're speaking with Danny Werfel, a director in the public sector practice at the Boston Consulting Group and longtime federal executive before that. Now, at the agency you were briefly at, the IRS, of course, they have the job of reprogramming all their computers to take into account new tax policy. And that's something that happens almost every year, not as a result of the administration necessarily, but what Congress does.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly right. I mean, I don't necessarily think that if you go back in history that you see major swings in the change of IRS operations over time from party to party or from transition to transition or from new commissioner to new commissioner. Remember, the commissioner serves on a term basis. So, for example, you can be appointed by one president, and when the new president comes in, you don't necessarily move on because it's a 5-year term. But the work that they're doing at the IRS right now to try to modernize, to try to develop 21st century platforms for tax administration, I predict that will continue no matter what, and they'll continue to try to leverage technology in new and better ways to create efficiencies and effectiveness in our tax system.
I guess it's safe to say, though, that the current administration that's about to be over, the Obama administration, has had a maybe more than normal share of activities that did result in almost fire drill creations of new things. For example, cash for clunkers required the creation of a new mechanism to be able to effect that program. And, of course, the Affordable Care Act required construction of the health care exchange. Didn't roll out so good in the beginning, but eventually righted itself, but that was a big effort like that. Even the inheritance of TARP required all sorts of new mechanisms, temporary though they might have been. And I think that's an unprecedented number of new initiatives that required a lot of effort by the standing workforce relative to prior years.
I think it's a great insight, Tom. You know, looking back, there have been what I'll call a high number of acute management challenges that this administration has undertaken. Starting 5 weeks after the president took the oath for his first term, the Recovery Act was passed, a $787 billion program that needed to be coordinated and implemented. And so starting right from there...
Yeah, that too.
And you mentioned the TARP bill, which the president didn't sign, but had a fair amount of responsibility to implement, standing up Dodd-Frank. You had the passage of the Affordable Care Act and all of the, you know, regardless of whether you love or hate the Affordable Care Act, massive amounts of management disciplines needed to be in place. And as we know, it didn't always go so well with respect to the launch of healthcare.gov is what I'm referring to. But in many other regards, a lot of what the HHS and IRS and other agencies had to do to get ready for the Affordable Care Act did go well from a management standpoint. So I think you're right, and I think the president and this administration really tested the federal workforce over the past 7 years to really see if they could rise to the occasion. And as we know, in many times they did, and of course there have been moments of failure and setback, but I think the government as a whole has learned, and I think it's a better, higher functioning government today than it was a decade ago.
So maybe this 2016 year of stasis and not a whole lot new might be good to get tan, rested, and ready for what comes in 2017.
Well, I think if there's a lesson learned for the new administration with respect to the federal workforce is I think in so many ways the federal workforce rose to the occasion with all of the challenges that this administration presented in these large implementations that we spoke about. But we have to continue to invest in the workforce if we're going to continue to see better and better solutions. And I'm not necessarily talking about a bigger government or a smaller government. Whatever government we end up with, whatever size of the workforce the next administration and Congress together determine is the right one, they should be highly skilled. They should know, they should have the tools to do their job most effectively. And I'll say one thing about these past 8 years. As I mentioned, we've had successes. We've had situations where we failed. There's an opportunity to take those lessons learned and combine them with the right investments in training and recruitment and figuring out what talent we need for 21st century government. It will be a really exciting time if we take the opportunity to invest in our workforce.
Danny Werfel is former acting IRS commissioner, longtime federal financial executive, now a director in the public sector practice at the Boston's Consulting Group. Share this interview with colleagues. Go to federalnewsradio.com/federaldrive and click share with friends.